All the sports, all the news, Sportsfire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Rico. Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Sports Fire. Welcome to our syndication partner listeners as well. On the show tonight, one of South Africa's top esports competitors, Yolandi Williams. Recently, the team went, South African team, returning from a successful World Championship event in Romania. Kickoff.com's Tiani Mabasa, he's in Cairo for the big game on Sunday afternoon. The second leg in the CAF Champions League final between Al Ahly and Orlando Pirates. Cricket analyst and commentator Neil Manthorpe is still on tour with the Proteas. Proteas 2-1 up in that ODI series. We'll get the latest. Sportsfire rugby analyst Dan Retief. Boy, we're going international tonight. He's in Turkey for the Turkish Golf Open. I don't know what he's doing there. But anyway, we'll catch up with Dan Retief. We'll talk mostly rugby and a bit of golf. Former Springbok lawn bowler Donnie Pickett. Springbok, top guy as well. And I know he's very involved with, I think they've got a sports shop at Wits University. We'll catch up with Donnie Pickett. And of course, Norm, our off-the-wall sports analyst. Inserts tonight, BBC Football, Mike Tyson on a meeting with Lance Armstrong, SA Rugby, and if you celebrate your birthday on the 7th of November, you celebrate with, among others, Liverpool football great John Barnes. At Joffe's, my boy, the Twitter address, Graham Joffe on Facebook, and the website sportsfire.co.za. Sportsfire, powered by Rico, South Africa's leading provider of document management solutions.
Daddy, why do you come here?
Because here I can be creative.
Why is that important?
Because that's how we create our document solutions.
Why do you need document solutions?
Because they revolutionize the way people work.
What's revolutionized?
At Rico, we have as many document solutions as a six-year-old has questions. Why? Because when integrated creatively, information and technology drive productivity and profitability. Rico. Imagine. Change.
Joffa's my boy on his soapbox. The Soweto Marathon and that email that was sent by Banele Sendani, which included a death threat, is nothing short of a sick and an absolute disgrace, a national embarrassment. But it just shows you what kind of administrators we do have involved in some sports in this country, and nothing gets done about it. Sendani, a former CEO of Athletic South Africa who was representing the Soweto Trust, was responding to an email from Nick Bester, who had kindly offered his assistance to find a sponsor for the Soweto Marathon. The email reads, "Hi Nick, I received your SMS to the effect that you have a sponsor for the Soweto Marathon. That is good news. The bad news is that James Evans does not recognize the Soweto Marathon Trust. I do not know why he did not tell us this from the beginning. My suggestion is that you should talk to James Evans and he will tell you who you must work with in organizing the race. But I must give you a friendly warning that if the Soweto Marathon Trust does not organize the race, nobody else will go into Soweto to organize it. James Evans does not know us. He's making a big mistake by thinking that we are the cowards that he's used to. We are not scared of him one bit. We are more than ready to show him who we are. We'll make him curse the day he was born, together with the people we'll send to organize the race. They will go into Soweto, but they won't come out. When it comes to athletics, Soweto is the exclusive domain of Soweto athletics clubs and nobody else's. We're ready to lay down our lives if need be to protect our domain. As I said, this is not a threat. Yeah, it's just a friendly warning. You may need to heed it if you so wish, or you may ignore it. It's entirely your choice." End of email. How Sendani can even get away with such an email makes the mind boggle. My personal opinion is that he should not be allowed to be involved in any sport in South Africa ever again. A life ban is what it really deserves. Nothing less.
This is Sports Fire with Graham Joffe, powered by Rico.
Now we're talking sports with some of our smartest people, our smartest athletes or competitors in South Africa. We're talking about Mind Sports, and one of South Africa's top esports competitors, Yolandi Williams, now joins us on Sportsfire. Yolandi, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Graham. Thanks for having me.
Good. You guys are Team South Africa, recently returning from competing in the IESF Championships held in Bucharest, Romania. Must have been a great trip.
Oh, yes. It was a wonderful trip, and we're very happy with what we achieved.
And Romania, was that the first time you had been there?
Yes, it is.
Great country.
It is, definitely. Some sights to see, but we didn't get to see too much as we were very busy with the events.
And can most of the people speak English there?
Not really. They struggle a bit, but the people part of the event at least spoke quite a bit of English, so that was at least great.
All right. Esports, your speciality, StarCraft.
Yes.
You're going to have to help us here. First of all, StarCraft for dummies. That's me and probably quite a few of our listeners. Just tell us a little bit more about StarCraft.
Okay, in basic words, it's a real-time strategy science fiction game that players try and build strategic armies to try and get an advantage on the battlefield. So you're basically playing against another person online. And it's extremely fast-paced, though, and uses a lot of logical thinking to try and outsmart your opponents.
So, and it's one against one?
Yes, it is. There is team games, but I do more 1v1.
All right, so you're the individual StarCraft competitor. But I think two of you from StarCraft got to the quarterfinals in Romania, which is a massive achievement.
It was only myself. The other girl, Lyrene, was in the Tekken.
In what's it called?
In Tekken, the PlayStation fighting game.
Okay.
She also got to top 8.
Wow. So you got to the quarterfinals in StarCraft. And, I mean, to get to the last 8 in a competition, a world competition, is that your biggest achievement yet?
It is, definitely. I haven't been playing that long. I've been more watching my husband for over 2 years and then decided to try and start playing myself because I'm very passionate about growing the women in the community as well. There's a great shortage of that. And from there, I started playing and got involved competitively and got chosen to go across.
And are you beating your husband yet?
No, not yet. I'll still get there.
And that's what I wanted to ask, you know, getting into StarCraft. I mean, you know, for us, growing up as youngsters, you get all these games and you try, but you don't realize that they become so competitive. Normally it's against yourself, but here you're competing at the top level in a world championship event. And so was it really just a watching your husband play, and that's where you got started?
Yes, that's exactly where I got started with it. That's where I say the bug bit me.
Okay, a bug. You know, we talk about the golf bug, but this is the StarCraft bug.
Yes, no, definitely.
You talk about wanting to get more girls involved and more females involved in StarCraft, and I mean, what else do you want to achieve from the sport?
We want to grow it more in South Africa. Esports is still not really fully known in South Africa. It's more in Korea and places like that. So we want to start growing it even more, especially amongst the women. And by separating women, we want to try and get more women involved, as there isn't that many women at the moment. It's an extremely men competitive sport.
Okay, so in a male-dominated games industry.
Yes, definitely.
And sponsors-wise, you know, not cheap to go to Romania for a world championship event. I know Colin Webster does a lot of hard work behind the scenes with Mind Sports South Africa.
Oh,
did you guys have some sponsors on board?
Yes, we had MWeb and Rocap that helped us go across.
Okay, fantastic. Big kudos to them. And how often are you competing then? Do you have South African national championships as well?
Yes, I do. It's my first year in competing, so I haven't been competing that much, but I am looking at competing much more.
Okay, and a little bit more about Yolande Williams, where you grew up, went to school, etc., and were you a sports person at school as well?
I wasn't really that much into sports. I only recently got especially into computer games with my husband. I grew up in Kempton Park. I have currently my BA honours degree in business management, and I'm a stay-at-home mom with 2 gorgeous babies.
Beautiful. How old are your kids?
One is 2.5 and the other one is 7 months.
Can they? So StarCraft's a bit too advanced for them at this stage.
Oh, yes, but they do watch quite a bit, so they're getting involved from a young age.
And Yolande, if people wanted to find out more about StarCraft and maybe, you know, just look what it's all about, and I mean, can you just Google StarCraft and pick up from there?
Yes, there's a lot of information on the internet about it. You can also go to your local computer store if you wanted to buy it. You can also buy it online. So it's very easy to get it and get information about it.
Fantastic. Well, Yolande, you know, congrats again on the big success in Romania, and hopefully there's more big success to come as well. And also, let us know when you beat your husband finally.
I will definitely do. Thank you so much, Graham.
Thanks very much. Yolande Williams, quarterfinalist for Team South Africa at the recent IESF Championships, which were held in Romania.
Hello, this is Joe Parsons at the BBC with the latest from the English Premier League. The Borussia Dortmund manager Jurgen Klopp believes Arsenal are good enough to go all the way to the Champions League final. The Gunners beat Dortmund 1-0 to remain top of their group with two games left.
They're young, healthy, they're good technicians. They're clever enough to win a game like this tonight, and of course they could go to the final, and who is in the final can win the final if you don't play against Bayern Munich.
Well, up next for Arsenal is a trip to Old Trafford to face Manchester United. The Arsenal manager, Arsene Wenger, says the manner of Wednesday's win will serve them well.
I just hope it strengthens the belief of my team and that we can put another great performance in. You know, we have another massive game on Sunday, and we want that kind of performance again.
The Chelsea manager Jose Mourinho has played down the fact that he left Eden Hazard out of his side that beat Schalke 3-0 at Stamford Bridge. Mourinho made six changes from the team that lost to Newcastle at the weekend, including dropping Hazard after the midfielder missed training this week.
He's a kid. Kids make mistakes. Fathers, they have to be clever in the way they educate their sons. He didn't play. He wanted to play. He's sad because he didn't play. We won without him, and Saturday he's back.
Away from the Champions League, Sunderland are through to the quarterfinals of the League Cup after a 2-1 win over Southampton. They'll now face manager Gus Poyet's former club Chelsea in the last eight.
It's going to be special, yeah, it's going to be special. But it's still a long way to go. I think for the fans it's going to be great. I think it's going to be like one of the greatest days in here, quarterfinal for the first time for many, many years. So it's something to enjoy. But I'm going to be playing against one of the managers that I admire the most, which is Jose Mourinho. It's going to be nice to have a word with him after the game as well, which is something that I'm looking forward to.
And for more football news from the BBC, use your mobile phone. Just go to bbc.com/mobile.
Right, local footballer it is. Tiani Mabasa from kickoff.com is in Cairo for that big game on Sunday, Orlando Pirates against Al Ahly in the second leg of the CAF Champions League final. Tiani, I know we've got you on your cell. I'm going to go through with it as quickly as possible. Hopefully we don't get cut off. But tell me, what's the mood like in Cairo? Did you travel with a Pirates squad? Tiani? Tiani? Doesn't see it. Okay, I think we're going to have to try Tiani Mabasa again. He gave us a couple of Cairo numbers that I don't think existed. I think we got through to Tunisia. So not easy trying to get hold of some hotels in Cairo at the moment. But hopefully we can get Tiani Mabasa back online. Some sporting events from today. It was the Nedbank Affinity Cup, which wrapped up at the Lost City at Sun City. Jacques Blow, I think that's his third win of the year. 15 under par, tied for second. Ulrich van den Berg coming off that win at Glendower a couple of weeks ago. 14 under par, tied with S. Surrey. A couple boys, or 13 under par, Ross Wellington, and then further down the field. But Jacques Blow, a third win of the year on the Sunshine Tour. Cricket-wise, a test match on the go, the West Indies against India. Big comeback from India. I think there was a massive seventh wicket partnership. The West Indies bowled out for 234. India, in reply, 354 for 6. All right, I'm battling to get hold of Tiani Mabasa, who's in Cairo. So what we're going to do is talk a little bit about Lance Armstrong. I was reading today Lance Armstrong saying how sorry he is for using the story of fighting cancer to boost his image. But says obviously he can't turn back the clock. The damage has already been done. And I found this quite interesting, rather more amusing. Mike Tyson on Fox Sports recently talking about a bizarre meeting with Lance Armstrong in Las Vegas.
I don't know how to say it. I think Lance Armstrong's a nice guy. I was a junkie and I was hanging out one day. I was really in a bad state in Vegas and I don't know. Somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, Mike, I'm Lance. Are you okay?" And I didn't really know who he was at the time. Somebody said, "Mike, that was Lance." But I was just really pretty high right there. And I know if he was a bad guy, no bad guy would ever do something like that. No selfish guy would do something like that. So for a guy like me, I'm at my bottom. I'm my nadir right there. You think, I don't know. I can't think that's a bad guy. Maybe I'm being self-absorbed because he was kind to me. But I can't call him a bad guy. You know, he may do bad things. But I would never call him a bad guy. He cheated. Everybody's going to do something bad. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't crush anybody's skull. He didn't cause anybody to have brain damage. He didn't rupture anybody's spleen. He didn't make anybody cripple. He beat people in races that were using drugs too. Lance Armstrong, he didn't put his hands on anybody. People got sore because he kept winning.
Mike Tyson, talking about Lance Armstrong. Beautiful. Right, no Tiani Mabasa at the moment from Cairo. Hopefully we'll get him on a bit later on the show, but we're going overseas again. Back to the UAE on a Thursday night to chat to Neil Manthorpe, cricket commentator and analyst. Manners, hello, my boy.
Joffers, hello.
Thanks for being available a little bit earlier.
That's a pleasure.
Right. Graham Smith out for the last two ODIs, a head injury. Did I miss something?
I think everybody missed it, including him. But you may recall soon after reaching 100 during his epic 237 in the second test match in Dubai, he got hit on the side of the head by a bouncer from Muhammad Irfan. And he passed all the tests that were conducted on him at the time, which, as you would know from your amateur sporting experience, and most of us would, basically consists of the doctor or the physiotherapist holding up a couple of fingers and saying, how many fingers am I holding up? What's your name? Where are you?
And he battled with those questions.
No. He got through those. And he was past fit to carry on. And, of course, he went on to make 237. But 7 days later, and it is actually quite interesting, and it's a something that is also quite relevant considering what happened to the Tottenham Hotspur goalkeeper in the English Premier League. But 7 days later, he was diagnosed with post-concussion syndrome. And it was actually during the second one-day international that he said that he was suffering from blurred vision, dizziness, unsteadiness on his feet, and difficulty focusing. They're four fairly important things when you're batting against international bowlers. So he had an MRI scan, which showed that there was no damage, but with post-concussion syndrome, you don't take any chances. 7 days later, he had these symptoms. So, he was on the plane today with his wife, Morgan Dean, and in fact, I think they've gone to Ireland en route back to Cape Town.
Ireland again, eh?
No. Well, that's the lady's home country, as you know, and she's got a couple of bright little kids to show off. So,
sure, 100%. We'll wish him a speedy recovery from that. So, I mean, a head injury is nothing to joke about, really.
Exactly. Well, exactly. I mean, you know, you have to take it seriously, and yeah, I mean, we will all have jokes about concussion and rugby players and the like. And it was interesting that Andre Villas-Boas, the Tottenham Hotspur goalkeeper, said, you cannot compare this situation to rugby or any other sport. And that led to a sort of worldwide condemnation by neurosurgeons and those who work in that. And they said, the brain doesn't know what sport you are playing. If it has been disturbed or distressed, it's exactly the same. So we can all make jokes about concussion and rugby players and that kind of thing, but ultimately it is a pretty serious event. So he's been diagnosed with to have 2 weeks rest. That's not a bad thing, is it? You wouldn't mind that diagnosis?
No shame. No, I'm with you. But and what an odd ODI series, I mean, to say the least. Proteus 2-1 up. Every game has something that just boggles the mind.
And there were lots of things in the third one as well. Bizarre use of the DRS, the review system, once again. There were lots of strange things. Pakistan collapsing to 116 for 7 in reply to South Africa's 259. Come on, tell me, which one did you have in mind?
Well, I was having maybe Shahid Afridi once again throwing his wicket away. I mean, bizarre.
Well, yeah. It actually goes back a long time. He's played innings like that. That was one of the most embarrassing and least convincing. But, I mean, this goes back probably 5 years when he played an innings in a test match like that, when he was actually test captain of the Pakistan side in England. And Pakistan had to bat for a day and a half to try and save the test. They were 150 runs behind, and he walked out and smashed a couple of fours and then missed one and walked off and walked into the press conference at the end of the day and resigned as captain. And he said, I can't do this. I don't have the patience for it. I'm not good enough. But it's pathetic. Because he was one of the most devastating batsmen in the history of the one-day game. He still got it with the ball. He's still a real handful, but frankly, he ought to be batting at number 12.
on the South African side, 50s for Dermody and Faf du Plessis. And for Faf du Plessis, those are much-needed runs because a lot of people are calling for the axe.
They were, but before we move on to Faf, you think there's a little bit more in that Afridi dismissal, don't you? You think it's a bit more than ADT, and you think that maybe there was a little bit more than just kind of gross inherent irresponsibility?
Well, you know, he's probably coming towards the end of his career. Make as much money as you can while you're still playing. But yeah, it's mere speculation. But it's just, I don't know. I've actually lost interest. To be honest, I just watched the highlights. I don't even watch the game anymore. I've lost so much interest.
Yeah, they ought to move on to making highlights of the highlights, shouldn't they? Really, then we could just watch a couple of shots and some wickets, and we could get it all done in 3 minutes.
You're very funny.
Jeepers, how are you going to be feeling when Pakistan come here at the end of the month and they carry on playing? It's the only team South Africa play at the moment.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because I saw your tweet and I wanted to know if you've got a crystal ball, because Pakistan are coming to South Africa for limited over series to fill the India gap. And I think you were spot on. You said, I bet you these grounds will be used. This is where they'll play the 2020. This is where they'll play the ODIs. Yeah, it is laughable. I mean, South Africa, Pakistan, we've probably got the best international relations at the moment.
And you know what binds us together? Both outcast by the BCCI. That's it. We're the two sick children. We are not blessed by India's authorities, and so therefore we have to stick together. And I know that we will get on to Faf in just a second, but what I would say to cynical fans are going, like, you know, what is this? Why on earth are we playing Pakistan again? You honestly have to take into consideration the fortunes of the unions, the franchises in South Africa, the contracts that Cricket South Africa has with its major sponsors. And, you know, frankly, I think CSA have done a brilliant job here. I mean, they've organized it at the very, very last possible moment. It was the only feasible way that they would be able to stop their franchises and unions from losing a great deal of money and from their sponsors also getting value for that. But so, and from in terms of context, let's just bear in mind that there's a T20 World Cup in Bangladesh in 5 months' time, and the World Cup in 15 months' time. So, you know, I think so. Certainly the South African limited overs teams need as much game time as they can get. So, I know that it is overkill, and I find it hard to justify, but certainly from a financial and practical point of view, I think CSA has done a terrific job. And Faf, then. Well, top score of 35. In his last 12 one-day internationals, and I can tell you absolutely for certain that he was in the Last Chance Saloon. He probably wouldn't have played the game if Graham Smith had been fit to play. De Kock would probably have batted in the middle order, and Faf would have sat it out. So, I can tell you that he was told, it's now or never, Faf. If you don't make a meaningful contribution here, then I'm afraid you're gone, and we don't know when you might get back. So in some ways that can be a liberating experience. He's not the first sportsman to walk out there and go, well, I know what the consequences of failure are now.
Sure.
And so I think that he did play with some freedom as a result.
Tahir, I mean, just making the most of this kind of second opportunity or second life, and very happy for him. Another four sticks, and he makes them play every ball pretty much.
Exactly, and when you do that, and when you're getting as much turn and action on the ball, and as many revolutions as he gets on it, then the batsmen are concerned. And what that means, again, this is the difference between Test cricket and one-day cricket, is you can't leave things alone in one-day cricket, really. You've got to play. And that means that as a leg spinner, you're you're more likely to get wickets with bad balls as well as the good ones. And that's exactly what happened. His middle two, a full toss and a half volley, one poked straight back to him, another one spooned into the covers. But the batsmen are nervous and they're tentative, and on pitches that take a little bit of spin, he's a real handful. Yeah, terrific stuff, you know. I mean, it would probably have been a little different if South Africa were defending 180 again. But, you know, he did that in the first game in Sharjah, and it's terrific to see. And as I said, in Test cricket, you can leave the bad balls or you know, punish them. But in one-day cricket, particularly when you're needing to score at six and over, facing a leg spinner who genuinely turns it both ways is a batsman's nightmare. And he's certainly done a great job, and like you, I'm very, very pleased for him.
Neil Manthorpe, fourth ODI on Friday. Manners, enjoy, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again before the tour's over.
We'll do that. Yeah, we'll have a chat from Dubai.
Fantastic. Cheers, Neil.
N, I've just got wind of an imminent security breach.
Don't worry, I've already destroyed Document Y.
You did what?
Relax, Bo. I first converted it into digital format with Document Manager NX.
Great. Now everyone has access to it.
I saved it as a password-protected PDF.
Really?
And I'm tracking any activity on it.
Darn it. With document management that good, I'll soon be out of a job.
You want to know my secret? A secure document solution from Rico. I'll even give you the password. Rico.co.za. Rico. Imagine change.
Hopefully we're going to get Tiani Mabasa on the line from Cairo just in a short while. Just going back to last night's PSL games, and in case you missed those scores, Polokwane City and AmaZulu drew 1-1. Sundowns beat Free State Stars 2-1. Golden Arrows beat Morocco Swallows 2-1. Bidvest Wits 1-0 winners over the University of Pretoria. And a night earlier was that big result with Ajax getting, I think it was about a winner, 3 minutes from time, to beat Chiefs 1-0. Tiani Mabasa from kickoff.com is in Cairo. T, hello, my brother.
Hey, boss, how's it?
Good. How's Cairo? Is it nice and hot there in Egypt?
Yo, people are crazy here. I'm here for the second time, but I still don't get used to the stuff they do, the way they drive. You know, just to get to training, you must thank God that you got to training, because the driving is just madness.
I'll never forget about 8 years ago. I was in Cairo and I got invited to the Al Ahly Zamalek game. You had to go 5 hours before kickoff in case because of traffic and security. We got there within like half an hour and I got sunstroke. I sat there for 4.5 hours without a cap before the game kicked off.
Yeah, madness was, you know, just getting through to training took us about an hour, you know, and we're not going far at all. And you have situations where you have traffic at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, so people never sleep around here.
Did you travel with the Pirate squad?
No. They put us aside. You know, they always want to do things for themselves, but they've welcomed us well. We're actually with them now at training at the military base somewhere next to Cairo. And, you know, it's just fantastic. You know, I'm just happy to see players like Happy Jale and Andre Jale as well being part of the team despite being suspended. You know, they're training so hard with the team. You know, so that shows team effort. They know they're not going to play, but they're more than part of the team. So good going for Pirates in many ways, you know. So for me, they look very good. Everything looks good for them. And the people here respect Pirates. You know, they say it's not like a case of, you know, it's going to be a walk in the park for Al Ahly. They know it's going to be a very, very difficult game for them.
The mood in the camp, coming off that draw, a point here, well, yeah, basically 1-1 here at home. I mean, it's going to be a hostile crowd there on a Sunday. Obviously, the Bucks feel they can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's looking very, very good. You know, they're happy. We spent most of the afternoon with the team, you know, and you know, they're just happy. You know, you can see they're relaxed. You can see they're focused, you know. So, good going from that point of view as well. And they're welcoming, like, you know, Father Braden to the team as well. It's gonna catch them the side on Sunday in the absence of Jelle, you know. So, everything looks good. Every player in the team looks happy. I can assure you of that.
They'll be the underdogs playing away from home, which is not a bad thing either.
Yeah, no, definitely, you know, but you know, those who know where Pirates come from in this competition this year, they'll respect the fact that they've been to you know, some tough games in Africa, and they still did well. You know, they went to DR Congo to face Mazembe there, and everybody expected Paris to be out of the tournament, and they progressed. You know, they went to Tunisia to face Esperance, and people are saying, you know what, the drew here at home, it's always going to be difficult away from home, and they prevailed, you know, so they can do it again. I have no doubt they can do it.
Yeah, and we end of last season, everyone's talking about Roger de Saar's got to go. Here we are in a CAF Champions League final for Pirates, and it's a big achievement just to get to the final.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, maybe going forward is a lesson for South African football fans that, you know what, you need to give a coach enough time to do his job, you know, and judge when he's had enough time to do his job. You know, in most cases, we just want to pull the trigger, you know, halfway into the season, you wanna fire a coach, and maybe 3-4 losses down the road, you know, you wanna fire a coach. It doesn't work like that. Give him time, and things can maybe change for the better. And in this case, if they win the Champions League, it's a completely different story. Maybe that will be a lesson for all of us.
Give us a score prediction.
Yeah, it's gonna be very, very difficult. I won't be surprised if we finish with a draw. And if we finish with a draw, and especially if it's, say, 1-1, because we played 1-1 at home as well, it's going to go straight to penalties, no extra time. So I won't be surprised if we encounter such a situation.
And the Bucks win it.
Yes, for sure.
Just before I let you go, quickly, I've mentioned the PSL games from last night, but Sundowns obviously on top of the table, 17 points after their 2-1 win over Free State Stars. Pitso may be slowly starting to get things right at Sundowns.
Yeah, exactly. He's in the same situation as Roger. You know, I know a lot of people doubted him after that loss against Polokwane City, but you can't judge a coach, you know, based on just one loss. You know, you just got to give him time. If they give him more time at Sundowns, if they give him a few seasons to actually do his job, I think Sundowns will be very, very successful.
Tiani Mabasa, in Cairo from kickoff.com. T, many thanks, my brother. Enjoy the weekend, and let's hope for a Bucks victory.
Thank you, boss. Thank you very much.
Cheers, my brother. Up the Bucks, eh, Tabs? Big smile, eh? You think they can do it? Yeah, boy. Yeah, boy. Okay. All right, rugby and Bok end-of-year tour begins this Saturday with a clash against Wales at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, and there was a Wednesday team announcement and media conference in Cardiff. Heineke Meyer, I think, made something like 5 changes, including Lambie getting the start at 15.
Yeah, Pat's been playing good rugby. You know, he's also used to playing with that back three and with that back line for that matter. And without giving too much away, he's very safe under the high ball, and he also adds something different on the attack. And I just felt going to use this tour to get Pat going. He's very happy to play there. I had a discussion with him. He's also still happy to play 10 as well. So I think that's the best choice for these conditions, and he adds something different.
And looking ahead, is it a possibility you might see him as a 15, or is it just expedient for this weekend, or how would you do it?
Yeah, I think the great thing about, if you want to go to the World Cup, you need players that can play a few positions. Obviously, the player needs to know exactly where he stands and where I see him in. The chance is good that Pat will also play 10 in this 3 test matches as well. And it's great to have a guy of his stature that can slot in, especially from the bench. He's been brilliant and showed some great signs on 15 as well. So probably not just 15, but we'll take it week by week.
Pat's very experienced backline you've opted for. Did you have Welsh experience in the backs in mind when you picked that backline?
Not really, no. Usually I want to go in an attacking mindset. I usually don't look too much at the opposition when I pick my side. Obviously in one experience going to these conditions, a lot of those guys has been there. Also, you know, a lot of these players is world-class players, and you want to see what they can do in the first test match. So I want to give them the chance, and then always probably want to use the second one to give other guys a chance, and then you'll know exactly where you stand after 2 test matches. But you have to play these guys that have been there before. They've been great in training, and most of them have been part of our team before.
What was your deciding factor for France?
Well, I think France is a quality player. He's always been part of it. When I started my tenure, he was part of the young guns. Even then, I really believe that he can be a world-class player. I think the one thing France is a specialist tight-head. He scrummed against the best team or best loser in the world in the championship. In Super Rugby, and he's proven himself in Super Rugby. Obviously, he needs the experience, and you're only going to get experience by playing in these conditions. Kuni is more impact player, I believe. he's a guy that has done well for us, but he's not out and out, you know, specialised tight end. And you know, I think Franz is a quality player. He's done well in training. He showed that he wants to play there. I think he's mentally tough. He's a good leader. Know him since he was a schoolboy, and you know, he's really a tough player. And I totally trust him. Otherwise, I wouldn't have picked him. And I think we'll have a great game. I think the other thing is he's playing along Bismarck, which is a very experienced hooker, and he's got two of the best scrummaging locks behind him. So I wouldn't have picked him if I don't think he can make it on Saturday.
Haneke and bringing Jock through straight back in, was that an easy thing? He hasn't been part of your squad before. And also, what are you looking for him to add to the back line?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, the other two players hasn't been dropped, if I put it bluntly. You know, you still got JJ there and Billy that's been there. So you got the Black Clouds played together for quite some time on the bench. You can always put them on. I just felt I want to see where Jock stands. It's been brilliant in training. And I think the one thing that he adds, which is unbelievable at this stage, is his organisational skills. He totally organised the back line and defence. We know we're going to fight a very difficult onslaught from the Wales, especially in the backs. And, you know, he's a very experienced guy. Still only 30 years old. And he's played at this level. Watch his videos when he played in Japan, flash speed, really comes hard in line on running lines. So you always want to start with the guy, and if you have to fall back, you've got the other guy on the bench where you don't want to bring a guy on and then you're not sure. So I know training in the deep end, but he's so experienced, and I still believe he's one of the best outside centres. So we get him straight into the mix and see what he can do.
That was Haneke Meyer talking about his selections for the test against Wales, courtesy of SA Rugby. Dan Retief, our Sportsfire rugby analyst, is in Turkey. No rugby in Turkey at the moment, I don't think, but for there for the Turkish Gulf Open. Danny, hello, my boy. And we're going to talk some rugby first quickly. Thoughts on the box squad?
Yeah.
Five changes from the side that lost to the All Blacks?
Yeah, I was interested in that, some of them. Haneke and I obviously wanted to have a look at Joe Furey and J.P. Peterson. You know, they were top players. Both haven't played since 2011 Rugby World Cup quarterfinals. But he clearly is still on this thing to see who he's got and what his asking will be going ahead to the Rugby World Cup in 2015. You know, and it's now just less than 2 years out. The interesting one for me was Patrick Lambie at fullback. You know, he hasn't played fullback since last year against England. And then he did duty as a fly half. And this season he's played outstandingly as a fly half for the Sharks. But I searched the web to find all the comments that Juan can find. And Mayer says that Lambie is very much part of his plans. And it's very good to have players who can fill up two positions. You know, so that means, I think, that you can read into it that Zane Kirshner is paying the price for quite a poor test against the All Blacks at Ellis Park. You know, he made some really quite crucial errors. And maybe Mayer, you know, having sort of almost in spite of himself watched the team evolve into a more attacking unit, probably decided that having somebody else who can use the ball at fullback in Vandy, somebody who can maybe split up that fly half channel by standing next to Mornay Stane, who can also drop kick. So I think a very good selection. And obviously, you know, I've always been a bit of a fan of Patrick Lambie, and very pleased that he's been given a chance to show what he can do.
Gary Gold said Wales lacked the mental edge to beat the box. I'm not so sure about that. After that British and Irish Lions tour, I would think they certainly have that mental edge.
Yeah, and they've really been talking it up. You know, they came very close to beating us in the World Cup in 2011. They're determined to be physical. In fact, I think that's the one change that Warren Gatland has made. Although when you look at his record against New Zealand, South Africa and Australia, it's not very impressive at all. He's got one win in 22 test matches. What I'm sort of concerned about, not concerned about, that I find interesting, because you recall I said to you on Monday that I'm surprised that people are giving Wales so much credibility in this game. I think the Springboks are the favourites. The Springboks are a better side. They're coming out of the Rugby Championship. They've got more experience. Wales haven't played since the Six Nations. Of course, they did well for the British and Irish Lions when they supplied 10 players in the team that smashed Australia in the last test. But that was Australia, and we're starting to see that the Wallabies are maybe not that formidable. They might be in an absolute slump, almost their worst period in the last 20 years. You know, so maybe Wales are attaching far too much importance to what they did to the Wallabies. You know, I think the Springboks can really take them up front. You know, obviously a risk gang was Frans Malherbe at the tight head, but he's been marked to take the number three jersey for quite a while. Interesting that they didn't decide to start with Kuni Westhaven, seeing as they want that to happen. But all that said, I'm also seeing that Wales are really sort of delaying actually naming their team to play the Springbok match because they've got a lot of injuries. And I think what Warren Gatlin's playing a bit of a game. You know, he's brought Priestland back at fly-off instead of Dan Bigger, and that says to you that, you know, he's gone with a more experienced guy, but a guy that hasn't played for a while. They just had a blow that, you know, they lost Alex Cuthbert, their big wing, and a young guy, a very promising young guy called Eli Walker, was going to play in that position. He's gone down with injury, and they had a call in a bloke called Liam Williams. You know, so they were a dangerous side. They've won the Six Nations 2 years running. But, you know, I look at the two sides, I line them up against each other, and I just say the boxers go in confident, and they must play like Springboks. They must play like a top Southern Hemisphere team. And if they do, they'll beat Wales. So that's my confident prediction. And I hate being that confident because I'm normally proven wrong when I get into that mood. But I'm saying we should have no trouble beating Wales.
Yeah, and the bookies, I think, have got the box favoured by about 3 or 3.5 points. Denny, quickly before I let you go, you're in Turkey for the Turkish Airlines Open by the Ministry of Culture and Tourism. Are you now South Africa's ambassador to Turkey? What are you doing there?
It's quite interesting. No, it's an old golf connection, you know. When you've been around for as long as I have, you make a lot of friends over the years, and somebody said to me, we'd really like you to come to this tournament to see it. And it's a very interesting event, you know, because the Turkish Airlines Open is being sponsored by the airline, a national airline. The airline has been voted Europe's top airline for the last couple of years. But what is very interesting, as you said, it is by the Ministry of Culture and Tourism. You know, they're really throwing a lot of money at sporting Turkey. They've bounced back from having lost their bid for the Olympics. They're going to go for it again. They're putting a lot of money in infrastructure. And then they're also trying to create Turkey as a golf destination. And this area where we are, Balek, in Antalya province, which is down in the southern Mediterranean coast of Turkey, I mean, there are about 12 golf courses just in the radius of about 10 kilometers, beautiful golf courses. The one this tournament's being played on is designed by Colin Montgomery. It's called the Royal Max by Montgomery. And right next door, there's one called Cornelia by Nick Felder, you know, and sort of a coastal area, but scrubby pine and a beautiful golf course. Unbelievably well turned out. And guess who they got? They got the world's number one, Tiger Woods. He's not the friendliest of blokes who I've yet again seen. You know, being yes, and he does as he likes. He talks to the media when he feels like it. But he did go and drive a ball across the Bosphorus Bridge in Istanbul. You know, so he literally hit a ball from Europe to Asia, and they've really gone for it. You know, and today it was rain delayed, so the course was soft. But what is really interesting is there's two South Africans up on the leaderboard. Couteer played out a hole. George Couteer played out a hole. So Darren Fichard with 4 Casey and Steve Webster on 7-under, you know, they're heading for 65, 64s because of the soft condition. It's just very interesting to see how another country does it.
Fantastic. Jen, enjoy the trip to Turkey, my boy, and we'll catch up when you get back.
Yeah, and I won't make the jokes about Christmas and Turkey. All right.
Cheers, Dan. And by the way, that leaderboard, Paul Casey at 7-under par, still the first round leader with Darren Fichard also now at 7-under par, and George Coetzee is just 1 shot back at 6-under par through 15. Celebrity birthday, 6th of November, Marc Rosset, remember the Swiss tennis player, Martin Palermo, the Argentine footballer, Mark Philippoussis, the Australian tennis player, Rio Ferdinand, the English footballer, James Franklin, the New Zealand cricketer, John Barnes, the British soccer player, and John Barnes is our topic of conversation by my sporting life, and John Barnes telling Danny Kelly about his career in football.
You've had with football, you know, in the army base in Kingston. I mean, nowadays, as you said, because you're going to do some television work in the Far East as soon as we finish this show, the Premiership, English football, professional football, it's everywhere. What was your contact with football when you were young?
Well, in a sense, it's big league soccer. I don't know whether you call it that here. And I remember I was actually a ball boy at a game when Chelsea came and Arsenal came. Frank McClintock came, who was on the show a few weeks ago, David Webb, and played and Santos from Brazil. So in Jamaica, you know, you'd always have teams coming to play. So while we didn't really see much of it, but even back then, football was, of course, the biggest game in the world. So,
but football, you know, the cliche now would be that surely cricket would have been the dominant game on Jamaica, but that's never been quite the case, has it?
Not as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we're talking earlier, and for me, the real cricketing islands in the Caribbean are notoriously Barbados. You know, as much as, you know, Richie Richardson came from Antigua later on, but Barbados was a real big cricketing island. Antigua, and of course we had Michael Holding, Geoffrey Dijon, Jimmy Adams. We had some Jamaican players who actually played, obviously, for the West Indies, but the majority of the side were made up of people from Barbados and countries like that. So as growing up, I did play cricket, but me, my friends, and as far as I'm concerned, everyone in Jamaica, football was much more popular.
What about now, though? I mean, you've recently managed the Jamaican side, and it seems to me that a great deal of the talent, the physical talent in Jamaica, is obviously going into the athletics.
Well, that always has been the case. I mean, long ago, I mean, you have Raymond Stewart, you know, in the Olympics, then you had Don Quarry, obviously, in the 70s. So athletics has always been big in Jamaica. The pleasing thing for me, and the most impactful thing for me in terms of Jamaican athletics, is now, once upon a time, one of the Jamaican athletes went to America, to university, and in fact, now the Canadian 100-meter champion from 1990, what is his name? I can't even remember his name. The 100-meter world Olympic champion, Donovan, whatever his name was.
He won Bailey, Don Bailey, yeah.
Donovan, he's Jamaican. So a lot of them actually become naturalized Canadians. And, of course, the big guy, Ben Johnson, he's Jamaican as well, but he represented Canada. But what's happening now is the Jamaican athletes are actually staying and living and training in Jamaica. You know, you always felt you had to go to America to improve. And very much like in all sports, it's a state of mind. You don't need to leave Africa to come to Europe to improve financially, yes. But in terms of what you can actually achieve, you can achieve it by staying where you are. And a lot of the Jamaican athletes now, the girls and the boys, are staying in Jamaica, training in Jamaica, and becoming world champions and Olympic champions without having to go abroad.
And in London, in 12 months' time, it is not impossible that all 600 metres medals will go to Jamaicans.
Well, in the girls in the last one, they went first, second, and second. And, of course, in the men, I don't think it'll be, of course, Usain Bolt and Asafa Powell are two. We have Freighter.
Boy Mullins is coming through like a rocket now, so
yeah,
we'll see.
But you know that American. What's his name? The one who's very competitive.
Tyson Gay.
Yeah. He'll be back.
Well, we'll see. Absolutely, we will see.
More athletics and football talk there. That was John Barnes, who celebrates his birthday on the 6th of November. A bit of a blast from the past now, although he's not too old, as far as I know. A Springbok bowler, Commonwealth gold medalist as well. Donny Pickett joins us on Sportsfire now. Donny, hello, my boy.
Hi, Joffers. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Where are you, in the pub at Belgravia?
No. That's where I'd like to be. Unfortunately, at the Spur with my family.
Is it your birthday?
No,
beautiful, enjoy. But Don, great chatting to you. And just tell me, I know you retired, but someone was telling me that you've made a comeback, or you are making a comeback to bowls.
Not really a comeback, Geoff. Is more of trying to get out on the Saturday afternoon and go catch up with some of the mates that I haven't been in touch with for the last 2 years.
So you retired then from all competition about 2 years ago?
That's right, yes, that's right.
Don, looking back at your career, you won a lot of titles. You are one of South Africa's top bowlers over time. I would say Commonwealth gold medal for you, 1937, is that your biggest achievement? Have I got the year wrong, maybe?
I think you got the year wrong.
Okay, take us back through that Commonwealth gold. I mean, that really is something special.
Yes, it definitely is, without any doubt, the highlight of my career. Not only the fact of getting the gold medal, it was one of only two that South Africa achieved in the first Commonwealth Games back, so it was really a special moment for us.
And some really good guys. I mean, we're talking about South African bowlers. We've had some exceptional bowlers. It's just so sad that we don't really get to play all over the world, and the sport doesn't get the publicity that it deserves.
Yes, it is a bit sad. If I take the years gone by where it used to get its fair share of TV coverage and newspaper coverage, radio coverage, and these days the bowlers seem to get none of that.
Mm. A little birdie tells me, though, you do have one regret of your career. Are you prepared to share?
One regret?
A possible picture with Mandela?
I do, yes.
What was that story?
Well, when we won the Commonwealth Games gold medal, we were actually all given the State President's Award. And like a fool, I sent my then, which is now my ex-wife, to go and accept the medal and certificate on my behalf. And it's certainly a regret that will have to stay with me for the rest of my life to meet Nelson Mandela.
And did she get a picture with Nelson Mandela with your medal?
Absolutely, she got a picture, and I can't even hang it up in my pub. My current wife won't allow it.
Well, at least you didn't lose that in the divorce. Club bowls, very strong in South Africa. I mean, you hear a lot of talk about it, the Belgravias, the Morningsides, the Wanderers, the Zoolakes. So South African bowls inside locally is still very, very strong.
Yes, I think it still rates up as one of the top club sports when you compare it to other sports, other sporting codes. It's still a very well-run organization, Bowl South Africa. And yes, even though the club's numbers are dwindling quite significantly as per the years gone by, there are still some very good clubs out there.
Outside of bowls, DJ Sports Shop at Wits University. You guys have recently got into retail, doing sports clothing and all our cover, including bowls as well. I believe it's the Henselite bowls. Is that from Australia?
That's correct, yes. We just recently got that agency. We're trying to take it over and trying to get it back onto the map where it belonged and where it used to be. And unfortunately, a lot of damage. It's lost its place in the market share in South Africa, so hopefully we can regain that.
And being an Aussie bowl, I'm an Aussie make, does it swear when it goes in the wrong direction?
No, the person that plays the bowl swears.
The likes of Jerry Baker and Dave Atkinson.
Correct. Those two especially.
And what else you guys have got? DJ Sports. I mean, you guys are based at Wits University. I think there's another store in Randburg. Am I correct?
Are we looking at opening another store in Randburg? Wits University just currently does all the sort of sporting clothing and et cetera. And we're looking to open up another store in Randburg. We're looking for a shop at the moment.
And you've got all sorts of sports. I mean, talking about sports clothing, so it's English football shirts and that kind of stuff as well.
That's correct, yes. And we've also just recently launched our website, where we're hoping to, by the middle of next year, specialize solely just in sports replica with shirts, and to make sure that we offer them at good competitive prices.
And that website address?
It's www.djsports.co.za.
And can you order online for the sports clothing?
Absolutely, yes.
So then it's like Mr. Delivery. You get Bok Bob and Donny Pickett arriving at your door with a Liverpool shirt and a pizza.
No, then no one would order.
Well, then send your wife.
Okay, yes, yeah, much better.
Don, really nice catching up with you, my boy, and you know, enjoy the spur tonight, and yeah, maybe we'll pop in sometime to the store.
Okay, thank you, Jeffers. Thank you very much. Good
chatting. You too. Cheers, Donny Pickett, former Springbok bowler. DJ Sports, for all your sporting goods or sports clothing, at Wits University on campus, and also online, www.djsports.co.za. Best on the TV then for the last part of the week. Friday, you got Turkish Open Golf, McGladrey Classic on the PGA Tour. The fourth ODI, Pakistan against South Africa, that's Friday. PSL Maritzburg United against Platinum Stars, and ATP World Tour Tennis. If I'm not mistaken, I saw today that Rafael Nadal will finish the year as world number one. Doesn't matter what happens now. I think he's won two or three matches at the season ender. So Rafael Nadal will finish the year as world number one. Saturday, England, Argentina, rugby, South Africa, Wales. That kickoff, South Africa, Wales, I think is 7:30 p.m. South African time. France, New Zealand on Saturday night as well. English Premiership, Liverpool, Fulham, Norwich at home to West Ham. Chelsea entertain West Brom. In the PSL, Aces against Ajax, Tucks against Sundowns. Chiefs at home to Bidvest Wits. Sunday, Al Ahly against Pirates, the big game, second leg in that CAF Champions League final. You got the final rounds in the golf English Premiership game, Sunderland against Man City, Swansea against Stoke, and the big one, Manchester United against Arsenal. Arsenal, top of the table currently. And then you got FINA World Cup, day two in Tokyo. To end off, as usual, it is Norm, our off-the-wall analyst, stand-up comedian Malcolm Ferreira. Hello, Norm.
How's Graham?
How things?
I'm a little bit worried.
About?
Why you're not here?
What do you mean?
Well, you guys are expecting again. You're going to be a father again.
Now stop it.
I promise.
Who keeps having these babies?
She says it's you. I promise you. And I'm telling you, they come out looking just like you. They're also bald and chunky. Promise.
You cheeky rabbit.
I'm not. But congrats on the kid, eh? But listen, Graham, I'm worried about your other one, eh?
Haldina.
The one he's 7. I can't remember. But listen, I'm very worried about him.
Why?
Because they caught him smoking at school. Graham, really and truly, we got to sort this out. Since when has he been going to school?
I don't pay the school fees, so I don't know.
Well, you don't even visit him. No wonder he's going to school.
What does the wife look like? I mean, you make people are starting to believe that I've actually got this kid where you live.
Well, it's, you know.
Where there's smoke,
there's fire.
I knew you'd say that.
Oh, wow. Well, your kids, yeah, of course there's smoke. What do you think? You know? Yeah. But listen, Graham, I was chatting to a friend of mine. You're on CNN, eh?
Yep.
Yeah. Were you the Oku Widow with a voice?
Nah,
that
I wasn't.
That used to say, this is CNN?
No, that wasn't me. But I was there for 7 years.
You see, I told him it wasn't you.
It was that big, deep voice going, this is CNN.
Yeah, that awkward, the deeper, that voice, that he had, it was so deep, it was deeper than Charles Manson's issues. But now he's saying you're a racist because he said the Oak was black and you just didn't want to be black. But you know, he says stupid things all the time, Graham, like let sleeping dogs lie. Well, why? How does that even work if it's sleeping? It won't be lying about anything. And it can't really lie, because if there's doo-doo on the carpets, it's either him or my mother-in-law, and she's not around anymore.
You are sick.
No, I'm telling you, why would a dog lie about something? People don't think these things. But listen, speaking of the CNN thing, the reason I ask is, did you know, we spoke a lot about the Americans in the funny sports, eh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they play like the rugby with the big pads on.
Yeah.
That poofy rugby.
American football, yep.
Yeah, well, obviously American, because that's where they play. You know, they wouldn't call it Norwegian football if they were playing it in anyway.
Okay,
never
good
mind.
On. Okay, never mind.
Let sleeping dogs lie. tell me, did you know these guys, I checked it out on a sports channel, they play netball.
On Supersport?
No, they were playing it on a TV. They're in America, though. The Oaks are playing netball.
So it was males netball from the USA?
Yeah, but it's a huge thing there.
Yeah, I think South Africa's got some male netball teams.
No, that's wrong. That's wrong. You just run around bouncing a ball and then they jump and they quit in a hoop and everyone freaks out like they've just found a cure for cancer. Hey? And it's ridiculous because all O's are so tall. That they should make a net higher.
Okay.
That's just my thoughts. I can see you're not with me.
No.
You're just jealous because Danny's in Turkey and you, yeah.
Everyone's overseas. Tiani's in Cairo, Manthorpe's in the UAE, Retief's
okay,
in
Cairo's
Turkey.
Okay, Cairo's not overseas, hey? That's over land. You know, speaking of which,
yeah.
I'm a little bit perturbed.
About?
About this Spain playing Bafana. Did you see Spain are coming here?
Yeah, they came next Wednesday, I think.
They are now, but are they saying that this is now like Musa historic? Historic. Graham, Spain playing Bafana, historic.
I think it's because of the winners of the 2010 World Cup coming back to South Africa. Maybe that's the...
No, I think the last historic Spanish visit was in the 16th century when Juan Elcano completed Ferdinand Melodrama's circumcision of the Cape. Spain playing Bafana is genocidal. It's not historical. And then, listen, I heard a rumor because our papers come very late sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, OCL are still asking if you bought the new scope. you know, obviously for the articles. But I see Victor Matfield is now in training again.
Yeah, it looks like he's coming back.
But how? So this is true, because don't joke with us, eh?
No, we won't, Normie.
Please don't, because, you know, things, I mean, old analog, Gravenstein, nearly had a heart attack 3 days ago when he heard that Mandela was released last week. So our papers are late.
Normie, we're going to have to leave it there,
but listen,
my boy.
I just want to quickly say,
yes,
we will,
quickly.
But the Bulls practice is going to be, has to be very carefully orchestrated now, hey?
What?
Well, you know, you got to make sure that the Oaks coming out of school that are playing now get timed well enough to play with the geriatrics that have to get back to their home in time for the dinner and a colostomy bag change.
Bye-bye, no.
I love you, Grandpa.
Good night from Sportsfire. All the sports, all the news, Sportsfire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Ricoh.